Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point, and the On Point Voter Roundtable is back. Every week from now until the election, we'll be hearing voters hash out the issues with each other and share what they want for this country over the next 4 years. Last week, we talked with voters about Donald Trump. Today, let's hear from voters for Joe Biden.
He's not my perfect candidate, and I'm not exactly a Democrat. I have almost always voted independent. I will vote for Biden because we must get rid of Trump.
I am enthusiastically, hugely enthusiastically voting for Joe Biden. I grew up in Delaware, and I am ecstatic that he is going up against Donald Trump.
Unfortunately, I do think the president that we have now does hit a lot of topics that are been ignored in the past and need to be addressed, but I can't stand being associated with him.
That was David from Columbus, Ohio, Kathy from Pawleys Island, South Carolina, and Mary from Pewaukee, Wisconsin. They called us to have their say. So now let's hear from voters in Texas, South Carolina, and Pennsylvania. And joining us from Columbia, South Carolina, is Andrea McCoy. She's a project manager at Staples. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. Rodrigo Gomez-Carlin joins us from Houston, Texas. He's a research technician in molecular virology and microbiology of the departments at Baylor College of Medicine. Rodrigo, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Meghna.
And also with us from Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, Melissa Brandt joins us. She's a first grade teacher and Pennsylvania State Education Association Southwestern Region President. Melissa, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, let me just get sort of a quick round robin from the three of you about how enthusiastically or reluctantly you're going to be casting your vote for Joe Biden. So, Melissa, let me start with you. Where are you on the enthusiasm reluctance scale?
I am as enthusiastic as you can get. I will crawl to the polls if I have to. I'm actually signed up to be a mail-in ballot voter, and I will vote for Joe Biden if it's the last thing I do. We have to get Donald Trump out of office.
Okay. Rodrigo, what about you?
I couldn't be closer to reluctant, if not considering it all. I'm not going to be getting my friends out to vote. I'm going to let them do whatever their conscience makes them want to do.
Okay. And Andrea, where do you fall on the scale?
I am absolutely enthusiastic about voting for Joe Biden, and am actually doing all that I can do to make sure my family and friends do the same. So I'm very excited to be voting for Joe Biden.
So now I want to hear the three of you sort of talk this out with each other. Andrea, let's have you sort of get us started, because you're there in South Carolina. And of course, it's the South Carolina primary that saved Joe Biden's campaign, right? Because he had been doing extremely poorly with voters in Iowa and definitely New Hampshire. So were you very for the former vice president even during the primary season?
Definitely. Yes, I was. And of course, as you highlighted, we saw a tremendous surge in the Black turnout in South Carolina for Joe Biden. Here, we feel that he connects with our community. South Carolina knows Joe, loves Joe, and Joe knows South Carolina. So we saw that in the primaries, and because, you know, it's all about the trust and that trust and confidence that we have known and learned to grow over the past few years, several years with Joe Biden here in South Carolina. So this is almost like a second home to him.
Well, so tell me specifically, Andrea, what did you see in Biden then that specifically that you think voters in New Hampshire say did not?
don't know. I saw more of he connected with us here in South Carolina. The genuineness, his compassion. He's able to demonstrate that he cares about the needs of everybody in all walks of life. And so that resonated with us here in South Carolina. And it just was that tipping point that made all the difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Melissa, what about you? What is really driving that sort of you will crawl over broken glass to get to the polls for Biden this time? What's driving that?
Well, first and foremost, what's driving that is I think that, you know, the person that we have as our president currently is not a leader, is not a role model for our children. And, you know, I've been an educator for 16 years, and I think that, you know, a leader needs to have integrity. A leader needs to be articulate, intelligent, and be a role model for our children. You know, we talk about the president and in our classrooms. And, you know, when I talk of a president, I think that president needs to be a role model for our children. And I think that Joe Biden is the best person for the job because of his stance on public education and helping our schools and helping our teaching teachers and our staff. And so that is why I'm such a strong supporter of him. I mean, his wife is an educator. So I think, you know, he gets it. Anyone that lives with an educator knows what we as educators face in the classrooms in 2020. And so, you know, that is why I'm so strongly supporting him.
Okay.
And I have since the primary.
Since the primary in Pennsylvania. Okay. So, Rodrigo, are any of these reasons to be more enthusiastic for Biden, are they reaching you at all?
All the reasons they've laid out, I honestly completely agree with. Yes, Donald Trump is a very scary person and isn't a role model for our children. Yes, Joe Biden is very personable and he does speak to everybody. But my concerns with voting for Joe Biden, and that a lot of people share with me, is his lack of a firm stance for the working class. He is largely running on a continuation of Obama policies. The fallout that happened in 2008-09, and that we had these large bailouts that went to large corporations, their CEOs, and we saw the middle class and lower class fall into bankruptcy, get kicked out of their homes, working on food stamps. And I don't see the commitment from Joe Biden in what he speaks about and what he uses his public platform to speak for the working class. I don't see that.
Mm. And so does that mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, so before Biden became the nominee, were you, who were you supporting, Bernie Sanders?
Yes, I was a very strong Bernie Sanders supporter in the 2020 primary.
Okay, and very strong meaning you were even working to get out the vote for him?
Yes, I was part of the Democratic Socialists of America in Houston. We held many fundraisers, debate watch parties, just going into public parts to talk with voters in Houston. It's a very important policy to me.
But you're not going to be part of the Democratic get out of the vote machine in Texas for the general election?
I was a part of the Get Out the Vote machine for Beto O'Rourke in 2018, and I spent every waking minute of my day and night thinking about it, trying to get Beto elected and speaking to voters. And what I saw people go over the line from always voting Republican to voting for a Democrat was that enthusiasm that, you know what, that policy he's talking about is going to change my life and people who look like me's lives drastically. And I just want to hear that flushed out more.
Okay. Andrea, then let me turn back to you. What would you say to Rodrigo about his concerns regarding what Biden says, what he stands for, that's making Rodrigo a reluctant Biden voter?
Well, Rodrigo, I can say that I personally have had the opportunity to meet Vice President Biden on a couple of occasions. And they weren't in the affluent areas of our city. He is one that will roll up his sleeve and will walk into a barbershop or areas where middle class or lower class citizens tend to congregate. And so my first impression of him was just that genuine and that loyal and compassion and concern for everyday people, particularly those of middle class or lower class. If you I don't know how much you follow, I'm sure you have, but if you look at his, you know, the humbleness of him, and just the, even in his transportation, if you know anything about his rail work, my brother works for Amtrak, and oftentimes Vice President Biden was on the train that he's working. And from just my brother's conversation, my conversation, and others that have met him, he's just such a genuine, down-to-earth, loyal person who cares about the needs of those that cannot afford to maybe charter a jet to where they need to go, or have, you know, lots of a trust fund assigned to their family. But he's down in the trenches, and even before being the vice president, he's done such great work in meeting some of the, or helping with meeting some of the needs in the lower areas of, mm-hmm. of our society. So I hope that as in the days to come, that you would certainly consider working a little harder to get more involved in the process in Texas, which is going to be a huge part of us winning the battle in November. So I really hope that you will join us and get out there and work as hard as we will to get him elected.
Well, Rodrigo, when we come back from this quick break, I'll give you a chance to respond. And Melissa, definitely want to hear more from you, from all of you, in fact. And as we head into the break, we're getting a lot of comments on social media. For example, Meg Backer from Michigan says she's going to vote for Biden. She wants an experienced moderate back in the office. Meg says, I want someone who knows how government works, including why we have rules. Someone who will make politics boring again. I'm exhausted by the last 4 years of chaos. Biden will restore the country's dignity. We are listening to voters who can be casting their ballots for Joe Biden in our voter roundtable today. More when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are listening to voters for Joe Biden today in our voter roundtable. We're going to be doing one of these every week from now until the election, listening to voters hash out the issues between amongst themselves and also what their vision, their hopes are for the next 4 years for this country. And again, today we're listening to voters for Joe Biden, whether they are supremely enthusiastic voters or reluctant Biden voters this time around. And a lot of on-pointers, if I may call you that, called us to let us know what they think. So, for example, Daniel from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Nicole as well, the two of them called to tell us that they were affiliated with the Republican Party, but changed their party affiliation to being Democrats after the 2016 election. Here's what they told us.
I want this nightmare to end. I want it to end really badly. I'm going to absolutely vote for Joe Biden. I would actually, I'll be honest, I will vote for absolutely any Democrat. They could have run, a dog, they could have run, a small cat, and I would have voted for it. But, Joe Biden, I thought was the best of the bunch anyway.
Last go around, I actually didn't vote for either Trump or Hillary Clinton. I actually wrote in John Kasich. This year, especially with how Trump has been in the office, I am horrified that I was ever Republican before. And I will be happily to vote for Joe Biden.
And here is James, an On Point listener in West Palm Beach, Florida.
I like Trump. I like his directness. I like his affordness. I like how he does not care about politics. But unfortunately, our system cannot handle it. And with him not even being able to recognize what's truly going on, the coronavirus, the Black Lives Matter, the economic, the climate changes, those are real issues that are need to be solved. And not for me, I'm 38 years old, but I have 5 children. And my 5 children need to make sure we left this country, this earth, better than when we found it.
It's James from Florida. With us live today is Andrea McCoy, a project manager in South Carolina, Rodrigo Gomez-Carlin, a research technician in Houston, Texas, and Melissa Brandt, a teacher in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. And Rodrigo, I'll give you a chance to respond in a second. But Melissa, I wanted to first give you, turn to you and ask you what you would tell Rodrigo or how you might try to convince him to be more enthusiastic about Biden.
Well, I think, you know, first of all, the Democratic Party is the party of the working class. And I think that labor unions and blue collar workers built this great country that we live in. And I think that, you know, voting for a Democrat, you're voting for working class. Republicans are not for the working class. I mean, I think they've made that abundantly clear. Donald Trump has made that abundantly clear, especially, you know, in the public education field with his appointment of Betsy DeVos as our Secretary of Education, you know, who puts money into charter and cyber schools and not into public education. And so, you know, I look at the date here today, and we are 2 months out to the election. And, it's time to maybe let go of who you did support in the primary and for us all to join together. If we're going to get Donald Trump out of office in November, we have to put our differences aside. You know, Bernie has come out in support of Joe and has made it abundantly clear that we need to work together to get a Democrat in the White House. And I think that that should be where your enthusiasm lies, is getting Donald Trump out and getting someone who's for the working people in. And that's a Democrat, and that's Joe Biden.
Rodrigo, what do you think?
I will just say that I am voting for Joe Biden. You don't need to work to convince me. I am thinking of the hundreds of thousands of other supporters that voted on policy. And Joe Biden does make very strong lip service. But I just want to hear more about working class issues, like getting evicted from their home, like being able to afford kids on their children's plate. We are in the middle of a crisis. We have had hundreds of thousands of people die in this country alone through a lack of leadership, through a lack of direction. And this could have been the perfect time to be drumming up that enthusiasm across the Democratic base. And then we look at who they made the effort to reach out to during the Democratic National Convention. We saw 2 or 3 people under the age of 40. We saw billionaires and Republicans that beat the drum for the Iraq War. Working class people were sent to the Iraq War, and coffins were sent back to homes. And we have a presidential candidate who is unapologetic for voting for the Iraq War. That hits home all across this country, and he won't apologize for that. He won't show any growth. This is a country where we have made mistakes, but as a former teacher myself, you recognize that people make mistakes, but they make the effort to change and to grow from it. And unfortunately, Joe Biden has been unapologetic on his stance on the crime bill, unapologetic on his stance on the voting for the Iraq War. Ed Markey, I'm sorry.
No, Rodrigo, well, first of all, I just want to say a couple of quick things for all three of you and for our listeners. in every one of these voter roundtables, we're going to try and get sort of a spectrum of views. But I don't want anyone to think for one second that we are pitting people against each other. We're not. I mean, we're going to create a space where we can have different points of view and learn from each other and agree to disagree sometimes. So this is not a Rodrigo versus Andrea or Melissa moment, okay? But I mean, I want the passions and the intensity to come through, though, because look, people see this as an existential election, right? I mean, even Senator Sanders said that at the Democratic National Convention. He sees this as a moment where, like, America's future is on the line. So people are going to be passionate about it, and I want that thoughtful intensity to be part of these conversations. So to that point, the three of you feel free to sort of jump in. I don't have to be in the middle of all of this every second. So I'll play traffic cop a little bit, but don't hold back. Okay. so what I wanted to ask. Any one of you, and maybe Andrea, let me just first set it to you and then you guys go off and running with it. I think Rodrigo is making a really important point about the opportunities, that Joe Biden has had to reckon with the parts of his long political career that key parts of the Democratic base might have trouble with. Okay. And B, he's also talking about if Democrats, progressive Democrats, are seeking transformational change, the midst of a crisis is possibly the best opportunity to do that. And he doesn't feel like that's happening. And that might be, those two things in combination are, you know, making folks who might otherwise be knocking on doors to get their neighbors to go to the polls, not kind of shrugging their shoulders instead. And what do you think about lost opportunities?
Yeah, well, I'll say, Rodriguez, we're all facing we're in an unprecedented time in our nation where we're actually dealing with two pandemics. We've got the COVID-19 pandemic, and there's so much social injustice that's on the rise in our country. And, you know, we have the health pandemic and the injustice that we're seeing. So I just feel that Joe Biden brings what we would need to connect not only people, as I said, connect the people across all walks of life, racial lines, bringing people together. And our nation needs that at this time. And then as it relates to the pandemic, his work that he and President Obama did with the Obamacare, jeopardizing that and the loss of healthcare for millions of our citizens, particularly in the time of a pandemic, is something that I think we all should be very concerned about and all should be working really hard to make sure we protect those healthcare the healthcare for those citizens in our nation, especially during this pandemic that has been taking the lives of many of our citizens. So I just believe that Joe Biden is the person that can step in on day one and start to turn our nation around. I think he's the leader our country needs so desperately at this time, and will continue to fight. He's a fighter to fight for our democracy as it relates to the injustice that we're seeing.
And I agree, Meghna and Andrea. You know, I see such an injustice in our schools. The area that I teach in is very rural and very low income. And, you know, funding is an issue. And I think one of the things that stands out to me about Joe Biden and his education policy is that he wants to triple federal government funding to schools from, I think it's around right now, $16 billion a year to $40 billion a year. And especially into the areas where I teach, these low income areas. You know, it shouldn't matter for our children what zip code they live in. They should all be able to have the same opportunities. And right now, under the current administration, they don't. And, you know, Joe Biden has been very vocal about coming in and changing that. And I think that is important.
I completely agree that Joe Biden would be a drastic different leadership for the country than we have right now. I am not a fan of the leadership we have right now, but I will say that the leadership we do have right now has directly spoken to working class people in being against free trade agreements and trying to bring factories back. Although in lip service, he at least says it. But in regards to the enthusiasm and the opportunity cost that Joe Biden is missing out on, a lot of people are voter shaming people on Twitter and Facebook of people that I won't vote for Joe, I'm going to vote for third party. Well, why are they thinking about voting for third party? A lot of my friends are thinking about it, and I have, you know, I still have to get my 2 cents. Like, it's really throwing your vote away. But the third party in the United States has a very large, strong movement. The women's movement, suffrage, came out of the women's party. The abolition movement came out of the abolitionist party, and Social Security came out of the socialist party. So third parties do have a role in this country, and they speak to people that feel like they're not being spoken to. And the opportunity cost of Joe Biden not speaking to those people, the opportunity cost of Joe Biden running the same playbook as Hillary Clinton in 2016, is that we're making this a needlessly close race by just saying, this other guy is bad, I am good, when you can say, I'm going to make your life better because you will have money in your pocket. You won't have to worry about getting evicted out of your home. As terrible as it is to say anything good about Donald Trump, he did push the CDC to pause evictions for the rest of the year. That kind of certainty is what Joe Biden could have been saying since March, and he's chosen not to.
But Rodriguez, he also failed to act responsibly in a timely manner.
Absolutely.
During this pandemic as well. So, you know,
failure of leadership.
That's exactly. So
I don't necessarily agree about the gain in factories opening and things like that. Here in Pennsylvania, we lost jobs in the last year. Lots of manufacturers lost jobs. I've read where the factory output has fell 1.3% over the past 12 months, according to the Federal Reserve. So, I mean, what Donald Trump says and what is actually happening, I think there's a big difference in reality in what he says and what is actually happening. So I don't know that I necessarily agree with that.
Exactly. And in terms of if speaking to the working class and loss of jobs and income, I mean, within the last 5 months, we, because of the pandemic, that may not have been as crucial as detrimental had we responded a lot sooner. Families would not have been losing the income or happened to face eviction due to the lack of leadership by our current president.
It is lack of leadership from our current president, but it's also lack of leadership from our House and from our Senate. Why are they on vacation for a month when people are getting kicked out of their homes? The moratorium ended at the beginning of August, and Trump and a lot of Republican leaders have lacked in leadership, but we can't be honest in speaking to everyone and not pointing out that our Congress has also failed us drastically. They could have agreed, made some compromise to put money in our pockets months ago, but we're still waiting on only $1,200, and I have lost an income. I am afraid of getting evicted from my property, and I'm just waiting for leadership from anybody.
Well, and I agree. I think, you know, elections have consequences. And I think, you know, not only do we need to think about who we're voting for in the presidential election, but we also need to think about our congressmen and women, because we need to hold them accountable too.
Exactly. So that's just even louder call to get people to go to the polls. I mean, honestly, whether it's by mail or early or on election day. But Rodrigo, can I turn back to you here for a second? Because I'm just wondering, you're saying that Joe Biden's playing from the exact same playbook as Hillary Clinton. But I mean, I think there's some evidence that it could be read in a different way. I mean, his selection of Senator Harris as a running mate, the Democratic Party platform is actually, you know, a several hundred page document with some very compelling ideas. And that perhaps I don't think, the Democratic Party of 4 years ago would have so readily adopted. I'm just wondering what anything other than what Senator Sanders was advocating, for example, even anything slightly outside of that would be acceptable to you at all? Or was it simply sort of like the Sanders approach to politics and policy right now that you're really yearning for?
I'm just yearning for progress. I really would like to get more attention for progressives and the progressive wing. But you're absolutely right. The Democratic platform we have this year is not something we would have easily accepted 4 years ago. And that's because of progressive movements like the Sunrise Movement, like people getting invested in their local chapters of Democratic Socialists of America. They're putting their energy to their communities. And I think the opportunity cost is on Joe Biden's campaign that they chose to not highlight them at the DNC.
Well, we are hearing from voters for Joe Biden this hour in our weekly voter roundtable. We have a lot more to discuss when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are listening to voters hash out the issues with each other. We're going to be doing that every week between now and the election. And in the next installment of our Voter Roundtable series, we are going to be hearing from voters in Wisconsin, because that state and the Midwest in particular may be make or break in the 2020 election. Both campaigns, the Trump and Biden campaigns, heavily focused there. So if you're a voter in Wisconsin, we want to hear from you. How has your life changed in the past 4 years? How are the protests in Kenosha shaping your voting decisions come November? What is your vision for the future, the next 4 years for this country? Who will you be casting your vote for? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. So Wisconsin voters want to hear from you. Today, we are hearing from voters from three different states who are casting their ballots, either enthusiastically or not so, for Joe Biden. They're in Texas, South Carolina, and Pennsylvania. And we're going to get back to them in just a second. But we did hear a lot from a lot of people in the process of preparing for this show. So we want to share just a quick story from a man in Georgia who told us he isn't sure whether he'll even vote this November.
I had always had a lot of hair on my head. I've always had like an afro or braids. But I had said that if a black man becomes president, I would cut off my hair because it would make me believe that more things are possible. So I did cut off my hair. I just thought it represented change.
So that's 40-year-old Chris Robinson, who was telling us why in 2008 he really enthusiastically voted for Barack Obama. He also voted for Obama again in 2012. But in 2016, he stayed home.
I didn't really think Clinton could lose. I thought they had it. And I wasn't super motivated. It wasn't like she was totally speaking to me directly. I thought she kind of got a bad deal. I thought she should have won, but I didn't feel that oomph like I felt with Obama.
And Robinson told us it's possible he won't vote again in 2020.
I'm kind of on the fence I'm a bit apathetic almost, but I'm leaning towards Biden more so. But I need him to hit the home run shot and really clarify what he plans to do. Not only a black agenda, but a black man agenda, because I think to a large degree, or to some degree, our plights are kind of separated a little bit. It's just going to take a little more than a Cool in the Gang celebration song and being Obama buddy to get me to actually come out and vote.
That's Chris Robinson from Sandy Springs, Georgia. Well, I'm joined today by Rodrigo Gomez Carlin. He's a research technician in the Molecular Virology and Microbiology Department at the Baylor College of Medicine. He's with us from Houston. Melissa Brandt joins us. She's a first grade teacher at Waynesburg Central Elementary School in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. And Andrea McCoy joins us from Columbia, South Carolina. She's a project manager at Staples. And Andrea, I'm wondering what you thought of Chris there telling us that he's not hearing enough from Joe Biden specifically about what a Biden administration would do for black men.
Yeah, I recently read where the black vote, male vote in 2016 wasn't there. And for reasons that he gave, that many of them felt either they didn't connect with Hillary Clinton, or just felt that she had it all bagged up. Well, for Vice President Biden, I feel that yes, that is the audience that he has to target to connect. He has to do a better job with connecting, and I think that he's doing that, and I think he gets that. That's why he's conducting these town hall settings in areas that are surrounded with the young black voters, or just black male voters in general. Barbershop, prior to the COVID-19, I know that Biden was reaching out to the community by going into the barbershops where they were and to connect with them. And that's the type of person that he is. He wants to hear their concerns up front and in person. And of course, with the COVID-19, that's kind of blocked that a little, but we're finding, I'm seeing that he is still using technology and finding some innovative ways to connect to them. And yeah, that is a concern. And, but I feel that he has accepted that challenge and is doing so with his efforts in connecting with that community.
Yeah, but is connection enough, though? Because, I mean, what we've been hearing Rodrigo, for example, say is that it's not enough, that you can connect all you want with constituents, but unless you're presenting them with policy ideas or an actual action that, say, curbs mass incarceration dramatically, that helps put black men in greater employment, that keeps people in their homes, that raises wages, that protects healthcare. Unless you actually have real plans to do all that, doesn't matter how many barbershops you go visit.
Well, I believe that Vice President Biden has a plan. I strongly believe that he has a plan to get the working class back up on its feet and going. Increasing the minimum wage rate is something that I know that he would like to do. Education, as we heard, he definitely wants to increase our education, because education that impacts our black community, especially rural black community as a whole. Vice President Biden has a plan to do that. He wants to protect our health care. As we know that with health disparities that run through our community, we have to have a good health care plan for those who typically cannot afford the high price of medicine and treatment. So, again, I strongly feel that Vice President Biden has that plan. He has a playbook that he's ready to roll out on day one that will continue to protect our health care that's been set up by the Obama administration, as well as helping to increase those wages for hourly workers in our country.
Melissa, do you want to jump in here?
Sure. You know, I was listening to the caller, I think his name was Chris, and it's alarming to me when I hear someone say that they're not going to vote or they didn't vote. You know, I have never missed an election since I turned 18, and I don't plan on ever missing one. And I don't think that we're in the position right now where we can rest on our laurels and say, you know, I'm not going to vote because I'm not quite sure that I'm okay with Vice President Biden. I mean, every single person needs to get out and vote on in our November election, because if we don't, you know, look what we've been stuck with for 4 years. Do we really want that to happen again for another 4 years? And while, you know, Joe Biden may not be have everything, so to speak, that makes you the enthusiastic voter that I am, if people are simply staying home because they're not impressed with him, we're going to end up in a mess come November again with another 4 years of a disgusting president in office.
So let me, we're hitting on something I hear that I think is still profoundly roiling the Democratic Party. And that is, there are people, I mean, Rodrigo, you mentioned this earlier, who look at unenthusiastic voters or potential non-voters and say, hey, you know what? It is a spectacular act of privilege in 2020 to think that you can sit this one out, okay? Because this is existential, right? There's a profound feeling that, you know what, maybe Medicare for all isn't going to happen in 2020, but there's an opportunity to I'm going to use a bunch of shorthand here, so forgive me, but press for time. But there's an opportunity to not have kids in cages. There's an opportunity to not have a president who kowtows to Vladimir Putin. There's an opportunity to put someone in office who doesn't regularly debase the office itself or say racist, sexist, or homophobic things. There's an opportunity to perhaps have a president who won't advocate for building a wall as a solution to a complex immigration problem. There's an opportunity to essentially hold the country back from a precipice that if it falls over, we will never recover from. And that is the real, to sit that one out is a short-sighted act of privilege, and the nation just can't afford it. So, I mean, Rodrigo, do you want to respond to that? Because I think that's what we're getting to here.
I guess I completely agree that it is a lot of people have very different views on how important it is to vote. I have a very particular view that my family comes from Peru, where it's mandatory to vote. And if you don't vote, you get fined. And I always thought that is something America should do. But it takes away the freedom. You know, America is this land of choice where you're allowed to make your choice. And voting used to be a very private choice. But with social media, it's become very public and people feel obligated to other people's vote. It is a choice and a lot of people make their choices. But I feel we're having a very narrow conversation, ignoring the 100 million people who didn't vote in the last election. It's more common than people who vote every election. And there's a reason for that, but we just don't talk about why that is. Is it just dispassion? Is it just hard to get to the voting place on election day? Maybe working class people just can't miss a shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
with mail-in ballot voting, anybody can vote. I mean, with mail-in ballot voting, we have literally put the ballot into their hands. And I think that in the 2020 election, I don't think in any election anyone should have an excuse for you know, not voting. But I think in the 2020 election with mail-in ballot voting, everybody should be able to vote, regardless of where you work, the hours that you work. You have it right there.
I agree that mail-in voting makes it absolutely available and accessible. I guess should we look in ourselves and we get our neighbor to vote and they're an enthusiastic Trump voter? Would we prefer them just not to make that choice? Would we prefer them not to vote? I wanted to get back to the connection piece from Joe Biden, that he has a plan to connect to people, and that the caller that we listened to didn't feel that connection with Hillary Clinton. I have made many efforts. I've been contacted 6 or 7 times by the Biden campaign through text message and email to join the Zoom call to listen to the man. I've been on so many Zoom calls since election season started that it's just become second nature. And I wanted to join that Zoom call, but to be in person, I had to pay $250 just to hear the man. That isn't accessible to me. He isn't speaking to me when you set up these barriers. And a lot of people feel those barriers in a variety of ways, whatever policy they have. Voting is very complicated, and it's hard for me to push people when they just aren't spoken to.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've only got about 3 or 4 minutes left here, and the time has truly raced by. So I want to turn to the finish here by asking all of you, what is your vision? What is your desire for this nation for the next 4 years? And Melissa, let me start with you.
Well, my vision is to have a president in office that, you know, I'm proud to call my president, and one that I'm proud to use as a role model in my classroom for my children. I'm not a mother, but I kind of am because I'm a mother to 23 children in my classroom. And, you know, they're the future. I have a sign hanging in my classroom that says the future of the world is in my classroom today. And, you know, if we aren't putting education and our children first, and we don't have a president that is putting those things first, where is our nation going to be in 4 years or 8 years or 10 years? You know, that's a scary thing to think about. And so my vision is, one, to live in a nation that has a leader that I'm proud of. And I think that that leader is going to be Joe Biden.
And Rodrigo, what's your hope for the next 4 years?
My hope for the next 4 years is that teachers can go to work and leave work and be able to relax in their afternoons. My vision for the next 4 years are that families can actually see each other and be present for weddings and other personal moments. My vision for the next 4 years is more comfort and more peace and more equality for everyone in this country. And that's what a lot of people in this country are looking for. We just want to hear it.
And Andrea, your hopes and dreams, your vision for America for the next 4 years?
I want our America to be just as we say it is, one nation, united. I want us to be a united country where we all come together, despite our backgrounds, our sexual preferences, our religious beliefs, where we're all together and we're viewed from the leader of our country as one nation, a president that we can respect, we can all respect, we can trust that's working for the good of the everyday working citizen, as well as the good of corporations and those companies in our country. So that's what I would love to see. I would love to see healthcare improvements and making tremendous strides in solving for cures for diseases that are ramping in through our country, and just making us a better and whole nation, coming together, united as one.
Well, Andrea McCoy is a project manager at Staples from Columbia, South Carolina. Andrea, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
And Rodrigo Gomez-Carlin, a research technician in the Molecular Virology and Microbiology Department at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. Rodrigo, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And Melissa Brandt, first grade teacher in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania State Education Association Southwest Regional President. Melissa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for this opportunity.
We've got another Voter Roundtable coming at you next week. For now, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.